and welcome to Season 2 of Aerial Evolution. First off, I want to thank Jane Rose for co-hosting with me last season. It was a pleasure launching my project with Jane, and I can't thank her enough. I also want to thank you, the listeners, who make this worth doing. So for those of you who have reached out, thank you. If you haven't seen it yet, I recently launched a website, www.aerialevolutionpod. There, not only can you listen to the show, but you can plug yourself, connect with other listeners, as well as contact me with comments or thoughts about the show. I'll put the link in the show notes, as well as the Instagram and Facebook links, which are both at Aerial Evolution Pod. I would like to note that this podcast is funded through the kind support of you, the listeners. So if you are a fan and can afford a one-time or monthly donation, it is much appreciated and 100% goes to keeping this going. For convenience, you will find a PayPal donation button on the website. Thank you. All right, so let's get to it. While still focused on aerial evolution, this season will be slightly different. And so to kick it off, I wanted to begin with a recap of what we've learned so far and what is yet to be discovered and or what needs to be delved into just a little bit deeper. Who better to do this with me than season one's first guest, Lydia Lara? Welcome back. It's so great to have you.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm very, very excited and happy to be back. And I just want to know what you've been up to, what you learned. I feel a little bit responsible in how your journey went because as your first guest, I think I gave you what I had, right? Which wasn't that much. Because I haven't been doing aerial as long as some of your guests that you had after me. But I think I set you up on that path with like, oh, I've done this and I've done that. And I know all these people and you should talk to them. So I want to know how it went for you meeting all these people virtually and what you learned and how everything developed. So I have a few questions for you.
Awesome. First, you were amazing. And I loved having you be our introduction because you're perfect because you do know so much and you know so many people. So it was perfect. I would say that you're right in that you did steer the direction of our first season. And it was great because you introduced us to so many of the pioneers.
Tell me, what did you learn? If you could tell me like the most exciting thing that you've learned so far.
Oh, there's so many. I would say one of the biggest things we've really discovered is that aerial dance comes from two tracks, right? It comes from circus and it comes from aerial dance invented by Terry Sengraf and also vertical dance from Trisha Brown, which was a total eye-opener. I had no idea about that.
Right. Yeah. After I was... you know, in the show, then I've been listening to the next episodes, of course, just to hear them and learn and see what I've missed and learn all the new things. And it definitely sounds like most of the guests that you interviewed either came from a circus background and then went on to this aerial dance career. And a couple of them were like circus and aerial. And then some of them were from the dance world, right? So you have from dance, Nancy, Jane, Chantel, right? They were dancers and then they found one way or another came to do some circus and then now it's they're aerial dancers. And then you have the other people like Elsie and Serenity and Melissa that went to circus school. So yeah, two very clear sides, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But then also there is Fred Deb who was a dancer first, but then went to circus. So there's crossover. Yes. So, and I think part of that background is what helped her change it because it was her class that was like, we're done with circus being this traditional art form. So let's transform it into something different. And that's what made it what it is today and this more contemporary
form.
So
because they began experimenting, right, with the apparatuses that they had, or they were also experimenting with new apparatuses and seeing what they do. I was just thinking about Fred. I've seen her perform a few times, and every time she's working on something new, on a new apparatus or a new idea. I think the last time I saw her, she and one of her dancers had these fabrics, but instead of hung how we do them, you know, they're like bunched up at the
the top, and then you have the silks under. They were hung like a curtain.
Huh.
So more horizontal. And I think one was like a very thick material. It was still fabric, but it was a thick material. And then the other one was like a plastic sheet.
Interesting.
It, you know, completely changes the look of it and how,
right.
as an audience member, you're like watching it. So just,
yeah.
So she's still, you know, finding new ways.
That's awesome. One of the things I learned from Fred in that conversation that was really interesting was the difference between circus and dance. And I think because she came from dance lineage, she was really able to see the difference and explain it, was that dance, it's about the choreographer makes something for you. But in circus, you create your own act, which
yes.
is very different. And I think too, when they were changing what circus is about, instead of being, oh, this is just tricks, and circus being like, oh, we're going to do this death-defying trick, and we're going to do this death-defying trick. Now, when they made it modern circus, they're like, let's make a performance that moves you. And how can we have something that's about something?
More of a story. And
yeah,
and,
exactly.
Yeah. Not that amazing tricks are not amazing, right?
Right.
Yeah, and sometimes you want that. You want to watch a death-defying trick. And that's why, for example, flying trapeze is so loved by audiences, right? Because you see them and you're like, oh, they're going to do this amazing death-defying trick. And we worry about the performer and we're with them. So it's one type of journey. But now creating a story and a character and including those death-defying tricks, but also have a beginning and a middle and an end and a story that you either want to communicate something to the audience, or you have something that you want to share, or you just want to leave it open and for the audience to interpret or get whatever mm-hmm. they want, right? It just adds
another dimension.
Yes, yeah. So it's very interesting. Yeah, I remember hearing her when she said that, and I was like, ah, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, when you're dancing, you are an interpreter, right? You're interpreting what someone else's work, someone else's idea. But when you are creating your own circus act, then you are creating your own work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I had no idea. And so that was really interesting for me to learn about.
And I think a couple of your other guests also mentioned working with circus companies at one point or another in their career where it was very much like a family or like a community
mm-hmm.
Where they all work together instead of having that director that
right.
tells you what to do, how to do it, when to do it. It was more like a collaboration of the mm-hmm. of the work. So super, super interesting. Oh, and then also, so the guest talked about circus and dance, and there was also a little bit of that performance art aspect of it with Trisha Brown, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's a dancer, but she's also was a performance artist, and she incorporated this harness work back in the 70s. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, gonna learn a little bit more about that in our next episode. But Vonda did a great job of explaining where all that came from in the last episode of season one, which was fantastic. That was the introduction to vertical dance for me, because it's not something that I've explored before, which was great. It's fascinating. And the fact that they've been doing it for so long is amazing, and a whole different avenue into aerial that isn't talked about enough, I think.
Right, right. It's not as well known as aerial dance the way we know it, like the way you and I do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hoop and silks and rope, all of that has become so popular on Instagram yet, right? You see it all the
right.
time, social media, on TV, even on TV,
mm-hmm.
TV shows and competitions and other shows. I was watching a show recently on Netflix that is based in Spain, and it's a strip club, but in the background you can see aerialists on hoop and silks, and of course on pole,
right.
you know, but we don't get to see vertical dance that much.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about special effects and when they're doing like flying stuff. Does that count as vertical dance?
No, I think vertical dance, it's very much standing vertically on the wall. Like you have to have
okay.
that contact with the wall, and you're mm-hmm. moving instead of on this, standing on the ground, you're standing on the wall.
Okay. So just because it's a harness does not make it vertical dance.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. You know, that's the other side of it, right? There is harness work. And do we want to consider that aerial? And do you want to go exploring that? Because Chantel from Fidget Feet, the director, the Irish aerialist that you had on episode 2, I've taken classes with her before. I believe they call them harness in the middle or something like that, where you are on a different type of harness. So the harness that you use for the wall, usually you're attached at the belly button, basically. So your harness has a loop there, and then that's where your carabiner goes, and that's the rope that is attached to the ceiling. So this other harness in the middle, it has two side loops. They're called side pick. So they're on the side and you just hang there and they can lift you and you hang and then you do flips and, you know, and you can dance and you can dance with a partner on the floor. You know, there's a bunch of things, but that's the type of harness work that is used in movies and for stunts and for, you know, martial art sequences where people fly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in Harry Potter and things like that where the kids are flying, you know, they're on a harness.
Yeah.
But that's also aerial work because you're going to be up in the air and then you can also dance. You can do tricks and you can dance to it. I think here in LA, we have a show, I think at the Queen Mary, where they use harness for like Halloween. They do a big show down there and they do harness work in the middle. But that's another side of it that you need to go explore.
That's the thing. The more I learn, the more I learn that I need to know so much more. I thought that this was going to be a project that like I would learn something and then it would get smaller and smaller and smaller and that I would reach an end. But instead it just expands and there's just so much more to learn.
Right. So great. Let's move on because I have more questions for you. So in that, was there anything that you wanted to learn or that you were curious about that you maybe didn't find an answer? Is there something specific that you can think of?
There are several things. So we did not get to address in season one a more global perspective. And we tried and we have started to open this up, some of the European perspective, although there's more. For sure.
New Zealand, you had one of your guests.
Mm-hmm, that Pope in New Zealand. And she, you know, she's the woman who brought it to New Zealand, which is amazing. So that's really interesting to have her. And then, you know, the US, obviously, and some of Canada. But there's a whole world out there. And so there's lots more to be explored from South America, Africa, Russia, China. I mean, on and on and on. So there's lots to still delve into with that. I want to have men on the show. Right. It has not gone unnoticed that it's been all women, which is wonderful. I love that we've had just women on so far, but it's not only women who do aerial.
Right. There's also a lot of men. Yeah, that's another thing, right, that I feel slightly responsible for because when I talked to you at the beginning, I told you about all these amazing women because I've gotten a chance to meet them and my years, and they just so happen to be the directors of these great companies in their countries and the directors of the festivals that I have attended. And it, you know, it requires a ton of work, right? And it's just a true testament of amazing women around the world. That makes me really happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always up for supporting fellow women, but we have to be inclusive here. And speaking of inclusivity, I do want to address diversity and diversity, including the disabled, which was a great conversation I had with Lindsay, who really opened my eyes to the disabled community and where we are. And I want to continue to investigate the history of circus and where we are and where we need to go and how to facilitate that and what can be done.
Right, right. And I think that it's a very lengthy and very interesting and it can be a very painful subject as well, because I think looking at aerial and now thinking that, okay, could have come or it has come part of it from dance and part of it from circus, then you have to start taking a look at the history of circus and the dark side of circus, right? Which very much comes from the freak show.
Exactly.
And those people that were part of the freak shows were simply people that were a little bit different in whatever capacity, right? And just exploiting that, those differences, whether we're different skin color, different body types, different abilities. All of that was put on display and come pay some money and look at this, which is different, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And, you know, you and I have talked about this a little bit, how it hasn't disappeared, which is something we need to continue to investigate.
Right. Because even today, we see big shows, and there's still a huge aspect of displaying those that are different, right? In a different way, or like, look at this exotic group, you know, from the Far East or something like that, right? It's always mm-hmm. it's changed, and there have been many different words on how to describe those that are different and displaying them and using them as attraction for that, and how that also translates not only on stage, but behind, and would that affect salaries and conditions? And I mean, that's a whole nother world.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if it's not talked about, it's not going to get addressed.
Right.
So,
yeah. So that's another, and that could be a whole season or more, right? Just for then.
Yes.
But I'm sure you'll prepare something for us to explore that side of it.
Yes. So it's on the list of things for sure. And then another thing that came up this season that I really want to investigate is safe risk taking. That was something that Nancy brought up in her episode, which I didn't know about in terms of Ariel and how it is a way of healing, which I thought was really fascinating. And then just thinking about the people that are drawn to it, that's something that I want to know more about. Is there research being done? What programs exist? What's the history of it? You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that is completely new to me. Yeah, another aspect of it for you to explore and find out more information for us.
Yes. Nancy brought it up, but then it came up again in Elsie and Serenity's episode too, where they were talking about risk recreation and youth circus in the 80s. So it's not a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just new to us. So
right.
It's an existing thing that there has to be information about.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Go do that. And then... make an episode.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I wanted to ask you about, well, for example, other traditions of flying, mm-hmm. right, that have been around for centuries and or even thousands of years. And I don't know how much of that has influenced today's forms of flying, like aerial, but I believe there's got to be something in there, right? There may be.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, I'm Mexican, and in Mexico, we have these very old tradition, and they're called voladores de Papantla, which means flyers from this specific place.
Mm.
And it's basically this pole in the middle, and it's a really, really, really high pole and really thick. It's not like, you know, like pole from pole dance. It's like... Mm-hmm. Huge. And then I believe there's five men, and it's got to be men.
Oh.
As far as I know, it's always been men. And still to today, there may have been one female flyer, but it was like, oh, it had to be men, whatever. But they go all the way up there, the five of them. And one of them is in the middle, and then the other four are around. And then they start turning something. And I really don't know how the mechanics work, but they basically are turning like a wheel in the middle at the top of it. And then slowly it's magical, and there's going to be something very mechanical and technical about it. But then they start flying around.
Uh-huh. Like on ropes?
Yeah, they have ropes as well. So the pole is in the middle with the one flyer, and then all the other four just fly mm-hmm. around. And they're really high up, and they have these really long ropes. And eventually they just orbit around it, and eventually they make their way down to the floor.
Mm.
Seems super scary, but it's beautiful. I've seen it a few times when I was growing up. And just like us in Mexico have that flying tradition, there are many countries and cultures that have other flying traditions, right? That are centuries old. And it will be interesting exploring. And now that I'm thinking about it, I believe that once at Brad's festival, there was a young woman, aerialist, who wrote a paper either for her master's or her PhD on this.
Oh, really?
So I will dig up her contact information for you. So
perfect.
Yeah, because if she has this, then she's already done a lot of that research of ancient flying traditions. And that might be a good starting point for you to begin looking and then find out if in any way those have influenced modern day aerial. But there is one example that I can think of, Malakam rope from India. I don't know much about it. What I know is that it's been around forever and it's done. I don't know if it's all of India or certain parts of it, but I know that certain tricks and, like, for example, toe climbing and doing a lot of work with the toes, that has been incorporated in the rope we know today.
I think one of the things that is really important is defining what is aerial, because Chinese pole is another one. And I think when I talk to people from other countries, part of this is going to become apparent with how these other traditions influenced aerial. But like I saw in a Facebook group, someone posted a question, is pole aerial? And some people were like, yes. Some people were like, no. And some people said, only if it's hanging. And so...
Right.
But I'm sure they have influenced it. Just like, you know, in the U.S., Terry Sungraf with the dance trapeze influenced us, but, you know, these other things in other countries have to have influenced.
Right. And even if it wasn't like a direct evolution of it, right? It wasn't like, oh, these flyers from centuries ago and that merged into this and this and this and this, and then we made it to modern day aerial. It may have happened that way, probably not, but for sure, the work and how we're experimenting today, we are able to look back, right, at what was before. And then we can think of like, oh, how can I use that today? How can I incorporate some of that today? How can I bring some of those tricks or technique or even the other part of the technical side of it and the mechanics of it? Can I use that to create new work today? And I'm sure there's got to be some of that. And I think for rope, that might be a good side of it, that maybe aerial rope, the way we know it, it didn't necessarily come from Malakam. There's Spanish web that was used, you know, 40, 50 years ago, where people were just flying, and there are other types of rope. But now the way we do rope today, the way we perform it and teach it, has a little bit of Spanish web and has a little bit of Malakam and has a little bit of pole, because we also use some of those tricks. So it is part of the evolution of aerial.
For sure. Chinese pole is grounded, right? Like, they're not flying.
No. I mean, I have seen performances where they jump from one pole to the other in the air.
Right.
So does that count?
Exactly. But that's the thing. Like, yes, they're jumping from pole to pole and it's insane and amazing. But does it count as aerial if the apparatus itself is not hanging?
Right. Yeah.
It's circus, 100%. But is it aerial?
Right. I personally say no, but... I don't do pole, so.
Right. I'm not saying I couldn't be persuaded otherwise, but at this point in time, I would say it's not aerial.
But if you yourself are off the ground and you are flying around it.
But that's acrobatics. No, I mean, that's acrobatics, which is different.
Right. I don't know. You may have to talk to some pole people.
Oh, wow.
For sure, there's got to be a pole podcast out there already where they have had this discussion. Is it
right?
Is pole aerial or not? And I mean, does it matter?
It matters if we're talking about funding, which is another thing we discussed a lot this year.
Right. Because funding here... And in other countries, that goes to the arts is divided by discipline, right? So some of the money goes to theater, some of the money goes to music, some of the money goes to dance. And in some places, circus is recognized as an art. So some of the money goes to circus.
Right.
And then aerial, or specifically aerial dance, does it fit under dance? Does it fit under circus? Does it fit under theater? Or it doesn't fit in any of them and it needs its own recognized category.
Exactly. And so that's when defining what it is becomes important.
Right. Right. Yeah. Just give us the money.
Yes.
And then that opens a whole nother side of it, right? That money goes to recognize art forms. And in some countries, that more money is going to go to art forms that have been recognized longer, like opera, ballet, theater as well. Those have been around and supported. And sometimes it can be very, very expensive to go to the opera or to go to the ballet or, you know, to go to the theater. When circus has also been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't necessarily been recognized as a high art form, right?
Yeah.
So no money, but wait a minute, why not? It can be just as incredible and as important for audiences that get to enjoy it.
Right. And they've been using circus in all of these other art forms forever.
Right.
So how can it be okay to use circus in these other art forms and have that enhance them, but not circus on its own? Like, then it's not okay.
Right. So that's a whole nother side of it. You have a lot of work to do, young lady.
Yes, apparently so.
Yeah. Anything else that you are curious about now?
There's so many more, but we talked a lot about safety. And something that I would like to learn is best practices as an aerialist to keep myself safe. Like, what can I add into my own routine to avoid injury?
Right. Because when we talk about safety, we usually look at the aspect of the rigging, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about that a lot with your guests, but we look at the rigging and making sure that I have the right hardware for it and that I'm hanging from something that is structurally sound and all of that, right? And then in harness work, Vanda was very specific and she gave a lot of very interesting information right now on how important it is to learn to rescue. So we always think of that, but there's also that other side of it, of how to train in a way that is going to ensure that your body stays safe,
mm-hmm.
that you're not, you know, doing pull-ups and then 6 months later or 8 months later, you've been doing something funny with your shoulder and now your shoulder is injured.
Right.
And whether you are recreational aerial practitioner or you want to be or are a professional circus aerialist, you want to know what's the best way to keep your body safe for a long time, prevent injuries and keep it nice and healthy, and not just for the aerial work that you want to do, but also that it doesn't affect your life outside of your aerial practice.
Yeah. Want longevity.
Yeah.
So it's important to take responsibility. And so what does that look like?
Right.
So yeah, that's another thing to investigate.
Yeah. And for that, I think that now there are more and more resources available and a lot of very interesting experienced people that you will find.
Yes.
That you can interview. So what else? Tell me, who is your favorite person to interview?
You, of course.
Well, after me, of course.
Every single person was awesome and just brought a new perspective and opened my eyes to something new. And it was just incredible to talk to everyone.
Who is the funniest?
Oh, Chantal.
Chantal.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me tell you something.
Okay, great.
Jane, she came on, she had lots of information, and then she mentioned her world Guinness record.
Mm-hmm.
So we lost it. I forgot to tell you this, but at the same time that Jane and her team in the UK were doing it, Chantal, the Irish, and a couple of us, including me, not a couple, there were like 30 people as well, we were also attempting it at the same time.
Oh, no!
I think the recordings and the visit from Guinness were within a couple of days or within that week.
Uh-huh.
And I think Jane and her team were able to secure funding.
Uh-huh.
So I could pay all of their professional aerialists. And I don't believe we had that much of that. Maybe we did. I don't remember. But at the end of the day, we were just not enough. And the record was for the most aerialists doing a synchronized routine. So it had to be the most number of aerialists doing all the same thing. And I think we had 27 or 28 at the end and they had 30.
Yeah.
So it was like,
so close.
So close.
I mean, that for sure surprised. I didn't know there was a Guinness book record, like for such a thing.
Yeah.
Her interview was surprising for sure, because I didn't know about the dome show where they trained all these aerialists for the show, and there were circus agents after that, and like it just really started a whole generation.
They had trained a bunch of people for this, right? Mm-hmm. And then after that show or exhibition was over, then you had all these ready to work aerialists.
Yeah,
flooded the market and had to get some work.
Right. Yeah, that was a really interesting interview.
She was ready.
She was ready, which is awesome.
I have to say that after I heard each of their interviews, I had to go and like stalk them online. You know, I have to go find them on Instagram and like research them a little bit. The ones that I didn't know, of course, right? Yeah, yeah. That I didn't know much about them. The other ones I already met. But Jane, I didn't know much about her mm-hmm. story. And Melissa.
Yeah.
I didn't know about her.
You had put it to me, find the person who invented the swivel for the dance trapeze. And then she heard that and was like, hey, that was me.
Oh, that's how it was. Okay.
That's how it was.
I think you asked, right? That was one of your questions. Who thought of that?
Well, I think you in your interview were like, I'd really like to know who this was because like, this is my favorite thing. And then she heard it and she was like, oh, hi.
That was me.
Yeah. And so,
yes.
Yeah, so thanks for putting that out there. And then thank you, Melissa, for reaching out and answering that question. And speaking of questions, if anyone knows who named it Skin the Cat, please let me know, because that's a bucket list item.
Right. And also, we've heard from these amazing aerialists that have a background either in dance or circus. And if there's someone out there that has a different origin story mm-hmm. that is not circus or dance, but that came from a completely different, you know, discipline. Yeah, get in touch.
Yeah, I am open to having anyone on that, you know, has been around for a while and started things out. So please reach out.
Yeah. So what's next? Who are you interviewing?
Yeah, so I have the next couple lined up. So next up is Sarah Poole. So that's exciting.
And she currently a professor at the ENC, right? The National Circus School of Canada in Montreal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's going to be a different season, hopefully. But lots of things to discover still.
Lots of things to discover. And it may be, I mean, there's so many things that you probably have enough for a couple more seasons, right?
I mean, that's the thing. Like I was saying, the more I learn, the more there is to learn. So
right.
I don't know when this is going to end.
Never. Never, because you're looking at the past, right? You're still mm-hmm. or have been looking at the past and where did it come from, and there's still so much to look at the past of Ariel, the predecessors, and how it evolved to where we are now. And then you have to take a look at where we are now and
right.
the major influencers right now and the people that are creating work. And then you're going to have to start looking at where we are going.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to start to interview those younger aerialists that are out there already creating amazing work. And there might be super young, you know, there are teenagers out there that are doing incredible work, and there are people in their 20s, and how they are shifting aerial in their unique ways. So you just have so much to do.
It's going to be a long one. And hopefully you'll come back. You're always welcome on the show. And if you ever want to guest host with me, please do.
Yes, I do.
I look forward to having you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ron. This has been so much fun. Thank you for having me the first time. And thank you for letting me come on again, too.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on. If you have any lingering questions about Ariel and its history that you would like addressed in a future episode, feel free to reach out on the website or on social at Ariel Evolution Pod. I always love hearing from you, the audience. Next week, I will be speaking with aerial coach Sarah Poole, who, in addition to sharing her story, addresses just what is circus and what is aerial dance.